You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Today, we take you to the Wilmore neighborhood of Long Beach. Just off Anaheim and Magnolia, there's a low-slung stucco building with a row of storefronts. The doorway in the middle has a long line of people waiting to get in, and that line spills down the sidewalk. Take a peek inside on any given Monday, and you'll see the woman who runs this place, a diminutive brunette named Shannon James. In 1 minute, Shannon is sharing cereal with an elderly woman. The next, she's racing across the room to slam down dominoes with a man whose face is covered in tattoos. We're at a homeless outreach center, and Shannon James started it 6 years ago. She's not a social worker. She's not a city official. She's a full-time dock worker at the Port of Long Beach, just a couple of miles away. As more and more people have been living on the streets in L.A. County, many Angelenos have wondered what they can do to help. Well, Shannon felt that way, too. And then she actually did something. KCRW's Angel Carreras tells us her story.
Shannon was driving home from work one day. She saw a man on a street median panhandling. She thought about just driving away, but she didn't. Instead, she gave the guy some money and asked where he was staying. He named a local park. He said, "If you're coming by, could you bring extra food? There's a lot of people there."
I drove by and I was like, oh my gosh. I think I had blinders on before because I'd driven by that park many times and had not even realized the amount. And that was 6 years ago, and it's doubled, tripled, quadrupled in 6 years, the epidemic of homelessness. So when I drove by, I saw women, I saw men, I saw all their belongings just sitting in the park, and I was devastated. It was like for the first time in my life, I actually looked and really saw something.
The next day, she went back to the park. Even more people were there, and more people were showing up as evening approached.
So, like, the third day, I went and bought a bunch of food items from, like, Smart and Final, and stuff that was easy to pass out that I could do by myself, and I pulled a wagon, and I just started handing things out and introducing myself, and I just was blown away by the grateful hearts.
Shannon says people weren't just glad for the food. They cherished the connection.
One of the most profound things was that people were just grateful to be seen. You know, the majority of homelessness that you see is in big cities where business people and well-educated are walking by and pretending that they don't exist because of our discomfort. And that, I'm gonna cry right now thinking about it because that is heartbreaking. I think to be unseen or unnoticed and feel inhuman is the worst thing possible.
So Shannon kept going back to the park. She brought food, she prayed with people, and got to know them. Eventually, she found a building not too far away and leased it out of her own pocket. $1,000 a month, under the condition she never bugged the landlord. She turned her operation into a nonprofit and called it Beacon for Him Ministries. Shannon now works with other nonprofits to serve hundreds of people. At Beacon, she hands out prepackaged food, takes care of people's pets, and gives rides to shelters and doctor appointments. She helps unhoused find housing, addicts find rehab, and helps people find connection. Beacon also provides stuff like coffee and board games and a place to charge a phone, but people come back for the connection with Shannon, and not just the unhoused.
It was on the list of meal locations put out by the agencies in Long Beach that deal with homelessness and indigency, things like that.
That's Mark Kennedy. He's been coming to Beacon for Him for about a year. Like a lot of others Beacon has serviced, he's since become a volunteer.
I'm not homeless, but I'm low income. I'm on SSI because the doctors say I'm emotionally or mentally impaired. I am a veteran, and so I struggle with a lot of loneliness in my life. Nobody ever comes to visit me, and so I do things like this to meet a social need and to give back to the community as well.
Ben Mears met Shannon at Lincoln Park one of the days she handed out food. He was homeless at the time.
I had a father who passed from cancer, and the last year of his life I was his primary caretaker. And cancer is expensive, and then I went try to go back to work, but where I worked, they had closed during that year, so I was without means.
He's stuck with Shannon and Beacon because of the personal touch.
Beacon's ministry is community. you know, just building relationships with people, not treating them as a number. You know, they're actual human, breathing, important people. And that is, I'm not going to say unique, but rare in any kind of ministry, be it secular or even faith-based. You know, a lot of the other faith-based ministries, they are so inundated and packed that they don't have time to sit and just know, get to know somebody. And especially for people on the street, most of the time it's just talking to them. Like if they have no access to TV or radio, just let them know what's going on in the world, that they matter enough for you to just sit and talk. That was the main difference, that sense of community, that respect, that I'm not just going to give you food, I'm going to sit and eat with you, talk with you, get to know you.
The great thing about her is she's got this really amazing personality, and I think that she's brought other people along with her. So she's really a team person, and I think she's got the right energy for this kind of work. But really, it's also the other folks involved. In many cases, most, you know, women that are involved that are doing this work and providing these important services.
That's Long Beach Mayor Robert Garcia. He's been aggressive about housing unhoused people in the city. Long Beach is one of the only cities in LA County where homelessness has declined or been stagnant in recent years. Garcia recently handpicked Shannon's nonprofit for a city pilot program. She's now equipped with motel vouchers to bring in someone sleeping on the street and connect them with services the next day.
We're trying all sorts of new ideas because no one has figured homelessness out and how to solve it. The state is in a crisis on this issue, and so we'll continue to test new ideas. But I do see her personality as really infectious and kind.
Shannon does get help these days from nonprofits, volunteers, and now the city, but she's still stretched thin. She still works full-time. She's at Beacon for him after work, on her lunch break, and she's a mom to four teenagers.
So I've had struggles with my kids because in the beginning I'd be like, my kids are okay, they have a roof over their head, they have food in the fridge, and I did get very off balance and I had to go back and apologize to my kids. Not that I ever wasn't being a good mom, but I maybe was distracted more than I should have been. And so they're my first focus. In my life and in the faith world, God comes first. He's first and foremost in my relationship with him, and then my family, and then the ministry. And if those things are out of balance, nothing works. And I've been there.
When I ask how much she thinks she spent out of her own pocket on Beacon, she winces and breathes in through her teeth. I don't know, maybe 70,000, she tells me, pinching her shoulders up to her neck. And she's not looking to downsize anytime soon. In fact, she wants to go bigger.
My big dream, do you want to hear my big dream?
Yeah,
I work on the docks, so I work around containers, and they're using containers for everything these days. I would love to see Long Beach open up a container housing facility.
She envisions a large industrial campus with a playground for kids, offices to assist in looking for resources, and enough personal space for everyone. And yeah, you can bet she'll be helping out there too. For KCRW, I'm Angel Carreras.
Just ahead, the race is on to harvest organs and tissue after someone dies. But how fast is too fast? And does all that harvesting and those organ donations affect autopsies, even hurt criminal investigations? You're going to hear about it. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It is October and Halloween is right around the corner, and this next one, oh my gosh, it is a spooky story. So here's a trigger warning. It is not for the faint of heart. It is, however, about a heart or kidneys or a liver. It's about organ harvesting. So when you were getting your driver's license, did you tick that donor box? You may be surprised to know that the business of harvesting organs bones, tissue? Well, it's big business. And according to a new investigation from the LA Times, some of those companies are rushing to harvest body parts after someone dies, so much so that they're actually bungling autopsies and death investigations, criminal investigations. Melody Peterson is an investigative reporter with the LA Times, and she's behind this super in-depth story. Hi, Melody.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Boy, what a fascinating tale. First off, when I think of an organ donation and that sticker on my license, or it's a little, I think it's a pink dot on the California driver license, I think of a patient waiting on a transplant list and getting my kidney or liver when I die. Is that exactly how it works?
Not exactly. There's actually two categories of body parts. There's the organs, which most of us think about, and then there's the bone and the skin and the rest of the body, which the industry calls tissues. And the two are very different, which is important to realize. The tissues are not of immediate need like the organs. Instead, they are processed into medical products and packaged and then sold to surgeons.
Like plastic surgery. Are you talking about, like, you know, a facelift or something like that?
Right. They take human fat and process it and make it into fillers that can fill wrinkles and magnify just about any body part you want magnified.
I want to get sort of to the bottom of what happens, because it's such, number one, it's a very heavy subject. When someone dies, and if it's an unexpected death or there's some sort of question about the death, right, there's an investigation at the coroner's office. We know that. The body is there in the morgue, in the coroner's office, and they go in. I mean, even before an autopsy can be had, the procurement companies, are they just waiting for bodies to come in? I mean, what is the, give us sort of the chronology of it.
Right. They've actually moved, the procurement companies have actually moved into morgues across the country to do this. In many morgues, they have access to the government computers so that they know when a death is happening immediately. And they do this because they need to move so quickly.
Right. The tissue can die. The organs, obviously, when a body dies, right, things happen to the body and you have to get those things quickly for the tissues and the organs to survive onward.
Right. Right. One thing here is the history is very interesting. So this has long been legal for a procurement company to take organs. About a decade ago, the procurement companies got laws passed across the country that required the coroner to cooperate with them so that the number of procurements would increase, the number of donated bodies would increase.
You're saying they got laws passed. You mean the lobbyists for the procurement industry?
Right. The company executives and the lobbyists helped actually to write these laws and then push to get them passed in states across the country.
Do those lobbyists, you know, I don't know what the association is, but do they give money to political campaigns and things like that? Is that what we're dealing with here?
Well, the industry is actually very, very powerful lobbyists, because their mission, their publicly stated mission, is to get more organs to those on the waiting list. So these laws easily pass, but the laws treated organs and bone and skin the same. And what has happened, the number of organs since these laws were passed about a decade ago have increased a little bit, but the number of donors of bone and skin have increased three times the number of increase in organs.
Because when you tick that box on your driver's license, you know, it's you think you're helping someone who has heart disease or needs a heart transplant or a liver transplant or whatever. You think your organs will help other people live on, where in fact they could procure your tissue or bones as well to be manifested into this whatever it is that goes into, you know, cosmetic surgery or things that really make a lot of money for plastic surgeons or for hospitals.
Right. So we found the procurement industry has long said there has never been a case where these procurements harmed an autopsy, but we actually found dozens of death investigations that were harmed. And there can be very, very serious consequences. There was a case in Indiana where a man was on trial for strangling his girlfriend. And just before the trial was set to begin, the medical examiner said, well, I'm not sure anymore that she was strangled, because the procurement team had taken a blood sample with a needle out of the body's neck. And he said he couldn't tell if the blood he was seeing there was an injury from being strangled or if it was caused by the procurement team.
I suspect coroner's offices across the country and here in Southern California, obviously, are maybe a little frustrated. Do we have any comment? Because you talked about one procurement company, One Legacy.
Yes.
What does it say about its role in these death investigations?
It says that it follows the law, and the law says it needs to get approval from the coroner for every case, which in most cases we found it did get approval from the coroner. In some cases, no. There were five cases that were never reported to the coroner, suspicious deaths that were never reported to the coroner. And the coroner only found out about those when a funeral home called later. So that leaves questions like, how many of these deaths are never reported in the first place?
I guess it's easy to get that approval, right, from the coroner when you're there in the office with them. Is that what we're talking about here? I think the location and the fact that they're right there in the offices makes this a super speedy process anyway. And there's what I'm gathering here is there's little room for error.
Right, right. So the procurements have to happen so quickly. And when somebody unexpectedly dies, a lot of things are left unanswered at the beginning. And in some of these cases, the coroner learned of something significant after the procurement.
Should I change my status on my driver's license? I mean, what I signed up for was to help another human being, obviously, in my death. I mean, now this gives me a case of the squishies.
Well, the good news is in California, you do have options. So you can go to this website, Donate Life California, and you can actually select what you are comfortable with and what you aren't. So you can still help people and not give body parts that you aren't comfortable giving.
Melody Peterson, an investigative reporter for the LA Times, her multi-part investigation into donor and tissue harvesting is up right now, and you can see it right there on their website. We'll have a link to it as well on our website. Melody, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
I just want to go on record saying I had nothing to do with that. Art in the Desert is a biannual thing in Southern California, but the organization that puts Desert X on is getting a little pushback about working with Saudi Arabia. That's coming up next on Greater LA on KCRW. This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Desert X is a public art exhibition that happens every 2 years. It's called a biennial. And this past spring, in its second installment, large-scale art pieces were spread all across the Coachella Valley, from Palm Springs to the Salton Sea. More recently, the organizers of Desert X announced a new edition for 2020 that will take place in the northwestern desert of Saudi Arabia. It's called Desert X Al Ula, which will be paid for by the government of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman as part of its efforts to cultivate tourism and to diversify its economy. Now, of course, MBS, as he's known, has been accused by the CIA of ordering the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, and his government has been accused of many human rights abuses. Not surprisingly, the collaboration has been controversial, and three Desert X board members have now resigned, including well-known L.A. artist Ed Ruscha. Here to tell us more is Greater L.A. art correspondent Lindsay Preston Zappas, founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Hi, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
You know, there's a bit of politics going
yes.
on here, too, right? So first off, Desert X has only been around since 2017. Tell us a little bit more about what Desert X does here in Southern California.
Right. Essentially, Desert X commissions artists to do site-specific installations in the desert that are installed for 3 months, and the public can come look at it. It's kind of open hours to come view. And it's really about placing art within a natural setting and sort of cultivating an experience with art in a desert environment. The biennial is hosted by Desert Biennial, which is a 501c3, which is interesting to note here that it's a nonprofit, which means they have an advisory board. So that's where some of these things you're talking about are.
The resignations.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So that's an important aspect of this organization. And so far, as I said, it's only taken place in the Coachella Valley. So this announcement to kind of move elsewhere sounds a bit sudden, but part of their mission has actually always been to connect desert communities and cultures through contemporary art.
And there's a big desert in Saudi Arabia, certainly.
Yes.
And there's a big push inside Saudi Arabia to make it look like this, you know, the kingdom is expanding and modernizing.
Yeah.
And it's not your grandfather's kingdom anymore, right?
Exactly. So this is really interesting and kind of a deep dive. But so Saudi Arabia and Mohammed bin Salman has announced this Vision 2030. So this is a large, multifaceted, complex plan that's being put into place to try and spark tourism. And of course, Saudi Arabia is very oil reliant. So this is part of their goal to kind of step off oil. But then this Alula Desert is just a beautiful site. It has been named a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it contains almost 100 tombs and different archaeological kind of remnants from various eras in the area. And it's still kind of being very much discovered right now. And the tourism plan also includes different sectors, entertainment, health, education, recreation, and ultimately it seems like they're fishing for kind of Western investments in the area. And there's some really weird involvements with WWE and Six Flags.
Wrestling, really.
And all of these things. That, yeah. So they're, like you said, they're trying to make it seem like, oh, look, we're progressive, we're Western. And, you know, it's important to note that this is a nation where women just were given the right to drive vehicles this year. So it's interesting to see that they're pushing for all of this kind of Western involvement.
Well, and obviously there's a lot of controversy as well, because there's been obviously a lot of political upheaval there. There was a purge, political purge of even part of the Crown Prince's family, the death of Jamal Khashoggi from, you know, the reporter for The Washington Post. So a lot going on there. And a lot of the people on the advisory board were like, we don't want any part of this.
Exactly. So some of those people, Ed Ruscha is a well-known artist, and he cited, you know, it would almost be like bringing Hitler to a tea party. Art historian and curator Yael Lipschutz is another one that kind of dropped off the board. And, you know, along with this Vision 2030, she was saying she doesn't want to aid in rebranding Saudi Arabia as a somehow enlightened or credible government. And then the third board member is Tristan Milanovic, who resigned as well. But some of the artists seem really split. Like, some of the artists are actually excited about the context and are interested in that desert environment. And, you know, the majority of the board did vote in favor. So of 14 people, the majority, only three left, so the majority voted in favor.
And the Desert X folks are really defending this decision.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as I said, most of the board voted in favor, and they've been internally discussing this for a long time. And a major kind of tenet that they keep repeating is that it's better to engage than to isolate. So they feel like it's better to engage there with the people.
And arts.
And bring art as a way of connecting with them.
Yes, because art is sort of a connection between people.
It can
all
be, certainly.
Different types of people. All right, Lindsay Preston Zappas, our art insider. You can check out her weekly art insider newsletter at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Lindsay, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Next week, for people serving a long time behind bars, the reentry process can be really tough. Support is essential, and maybe a ceremony can help. You're going to hear that next week. Next on KCRW, it's story time with Michael Silverblatt, the bookworm. Christian Bordahl runs the show. Our producer is Jenna Cagle. Sonia Geis edits. Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, and Christine Camita mix and engineer. And Amy Ta makes it all look nice online. Speaking of which, we are online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast anytime. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ear and for your time. Have a great Thursday.